Greetings, America, and the globe. It is I, once again, Brad Friedman of bradblog.com, coming to you live from the left coast here on the Mike Malloy Show, as Mike and Kathy have one more day off. Well, then they got a weekend, but they will be back Monday. Until then, you got me live from the left coast in beautiful downtown Burbank, here at the AM K-Talk AM 1150 studios in Los Angeles. Glad you could join us tonight, because let me tell you what. Bombshell coming straight ahead this hour. Go call your friends. Go call your friends. Go wake your neighbors. Go wake your kids. You got young kids, because this is going to affect them, and they're going to want to know about it. And I don't know how old they are now, but if they're too young right now to ask, oh, in a couple of years, they're going to say, Mommy, Daddy, why can't I vote on the internets? You're about to find out why. We've got some absolute unreported bombshell stuff coming. We talked a little bit about this recent hack of a internet voting system in Washington, D.C. It was a system that was about to go live. We talked a little bit about it last night on the show, and the hacker and his team who took over the entire server, changed all the ballots with write-in votes, got backdoor access, set up backdoor access to the system. What else did they do? Put in a script there so that it would change future votes. They revealed the identities of the people who voted and how they voted. All of this stuff, unbelievable, but you ain't heard the half of it. I've been listening to a hearing today that took place in D.C. about this hack. And remember, this was about to go live in just a couple days for the November elections. Military and overseas voters were prepared to use this system until these hero white hat hackers got in and did what they did. Anyway, that stuff I just gave you has already been reported. It just broke a couple of days ago. I got it. You can bone up on it over at bradblog.com. We'll talk about those details. But then we're going to add the bombshells on top of it that came out at this hearing today that, it blew my mind. We'll see if it blows yours. To that end, we had hoped to actually have that hacker, which was a J. Alex Halderman, assistant professor from University of Michigan, who did this hack with his team. They put their calling card on it. The Michigan University of Michigan fight song would play after people voted. And yet they still didn't notice that he had hacked the system for about 3 or 4 days. We were going to have him on today, but he had to do his testimony in D.C., and so he's in transit, was not able to make it. But believe me, the fellow we got coming on is no sloppy seconds. Dr. David Jefferson from Livermore National Laboratories is going to talk to us about that D.C. voting hack, the new bombshells that came out today, and one discovery that he made when he was able to test the system as well over the last couple of days. And Dr. Jefferson has been perhaps the loudest, longest voice on the dangers of internet voting, going back a decade trying to say, hey, people, are you crazy? He also has worked for five consecutive secretaries of state out here in California on electronic voting. This guy knows his stuff. He's going to join us, and we will have those bombshells in this hour. You'll want to stay tuned. Coming in the later in the show to talk me off the ledge, Liz Winstead, the co-creator of The Daily Show, will be here to bring to funny, because I need some funny, particularly after the chilling information you're going to hear this hour. So Liz Winstead is going to join us. John Wellington Ennis is going to join, a filmmaker who is working on a new documentary called Pay to Play. He's going to be here to give us a quick idea of what that's like and talk about a fundraiser out here in California. Actually, if you're out in Beverly Hills tomorrow, Saturday, I'll have the information on where it is soon, because I'm appearing there. So it'll be good if I find out where it is. But he's going to be here to talk about that. And then you're going to tell me tonight, when we open up the phones, since this may be my last chance to sit in for Mike before he comes back, and before, well, certainly before he comes back, but before the election this year, you get to call and tell me how I should vote and why. Who I should vote for, Republicans, Democrats, should I not vote at all? Should I vote for independents? Anyway, we'll get to all of that later in the show, straight ahead. At the same time, going on over at bradblog.com, we've got a lovely chat room that is open and very lively, as it was last night. The lovely Desi Doyen and Jeannie Dean are hostessing tonight and keeping an eye on the chat room. When I can't, I'll do my best to stick my nose in there. But y'all should come on over, because they're real great people. And it's really, I always go home at the end of the night and read what everybody was talking about, what I might have missed if I didn't notice it. And it's a great chat room, great folks over there. And they are very, very funny. So that's over at bradblog.com, the top item. You can click through it and it'll take you down to the chat room. And finally, tonight, our phone numbers are, don't use the regular Mike Malloy numbers, use the new ones, well, the ones for today out here in Los Angeles, 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. Write it down, because you're going to want to call. You're going to want to call probably in the next hour when we have Liz Winstead, because I'm going to try to open it up to the lines. I'm going to talk to her about The Daily Show. Have you heard about The Daily Show? We're going to talk about politics and all that stuff, too. But I got some questions about The Daily Show. She and I met over the summer in Las Vegas and became fast friends. And I should say, if she doesn't behave and play along, I have some photographs from the summer in Vegas of Liz Winstead doing something on a table that, well, I don't want to go into details, but if I need to, I will post some of those photographs. What happens in Vegas doesn't necessarily stay in Vegas, as it turns out. Before we get on to this upcoming to Dr. Jefferson on this, just, it's not even a bombshell. It's like three or four bombshells, and I'm not overstating it. Well, you'll see. You'll find out. You'll see if I'm overstating this or not. I don't think I am, because it's been freaking me out all day. It's been freaking David Jefferson out for about 10 years. But for me today, and well, you'll find out. A piece of business, though, that I did want to get to, particularly for our friends and listeners in Connecticut, or if you know someone in Connecticut, wanted to get to this last night, didn't have time. So, and I'm going to not have time tonight to get into the details, other than to say, you remember Ann Coulter? She used to be well known. She was a bit of a GOP superstar, and now she's, of course, been superseded by all kinds of other nuts and lunatics. But she's still bopping around, and we had reported over the last several years at Brad Blog, showing in no uncertain terms, that for all of the Sturm und Drang and nonsense that you hear from the Republicans about voter fraud, and all these Democrats are out there, they're voting twice, and they're dead people are voting, and they're stuffing the ballot box. All this, well, you know, that ain't happening. At least not in numbers that affect elections. However, there is one case of, well, at least one case of voter fraud that did happen, and that would be Ann Coulter, who in Florida in 2005 committed both voter registration fraud and voter fraud. She committed voter registration fraud when she filled out her registration form, swore to it, signed it, swore to it, but gave a different address other than the one that she actually lived in. And then she committed voter fraud when she went to the polls and voted knowingly at the wrong polling place. Anyway, she got off the hook. Long story. You can check it out all at bradblog.com/Coulter fraud. The whole years-long story, as I told it, with the documentation in no uncertain terms showing that she committed fraud there. But eventually, she got a lot of help from Republican law enforcement down there. She had her old FBI boyfriend come in and get her off the hook. Like I say, it's all documented. That's Florida. And eventually she got off the hook because why? The statute of limitations ran out. That's what the Florida State Commission ultimately decided. Oh, well, too late. Can't do anything about it after delay. But in Connecticut, it's a different story. And they don't have the same statute of limitations for these kind of crimes that they do in Florida. And as it turns out, official charges were filed in 2009 that Ms. Coulter, our good friend, voted illegally from New York City, where she lived, in Connecticut. Absentee voted was not legally allowed to do so in 2002 and 2004. Them's the charges. They were made in early 2009. We reported at Brad Blog. We've been following up with Connecticut officials trying to say, well, what the hell happened? Why hasn't this, you know, come out for a hearing? What's the status of this case? They have been tight-lipped. This week, we learn that the case, Ann Coulter's case, will now be coming out, coming up for a vote before the Connecticut State Elections Enforcement Commission next Thursday in a public hearing. Thursday, October 14th at 9 a.m., if you're in Hartford, stop on by. Bring some video cameras. 20 Trinity Street in Hartford, Connecticut. It's an open hearing. Connecticut State Election Enforcement Commission, Thursday, October 14th at 9 a.m. Would love for folks to be there, to videotape, to get some good citizen journalists out there. Let us know what's going on. What we don't know is what the vote will be on. They haven't told me, and I've been trying to get it. Will they be throwing out the case? Will they be referring it to a prosecutor? Will they be voting on a settlement for a slap on the wrist? Will they announce that some statute of limitations that we didn't know about has run out? We don't know, but I'd like people to be there. Otherwise, it goes down the memory hole. Thursday, October 14th, 9 a.m. in Hartford, Connecticut, 20 Trinity Street. And if Ann is there, which I doubt she will be, please do give her my regards. We're coming back with David Jefferson from Livermore Laboratories, and we're going to talk about this unbelievable, well, DC, they were planning to use this system in days, and they had opened it up, and they said, hey, hackers, you want to come in and test this system? We'll give you a couple of days. Go. And, well, within 36 hours, they took over the entire system. We know about what they did. We now know who did it. But there's some information that you don't know, that you haven't heard, even if you have followed this story. And that's not easy unless you read Brad Blog. But there's some information you don't have that ought to scare the hell out of you, whether you're Democratic, Republican, Independent. Pay attention, please. You're listening to Brad on The Mike Malloy Show. We'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the Mike Malloy Show. Brad Friedman of bradblog.com in for Mike. All right, I've been telling you about this. I've been tweeting this all day, calling it a bombshell. And I don't think I've been overstating it, but you'll tell me. We're going to tease this out to you as we go throughout this hour because there are a number of pieces, a number of bombshells. Joining me, I already lost my hang on. There we go. I already lost track of what I had, my notes here. Dr. David Jefferson is going to join us here. He is an internationally recognized expert on voting systems and election technology. He's been a pioneer in research at the intersection of computing, the internet, and the election for elections for 15 years. Yeah, he's been paying attention to this stuff long before you and I have. He's also been advisor to five successive secretaries of state out here in California on technology-related issues. In 2004, he was co-author of the CERV Security Report, which detailed major security vulnerabilities in the Department of Defense's proposed internet voting system in 2004, and that led, thankfully, to the cancellation of the program. He has a resume here too long to list of people that he has testified before, commissions, official commissions, and so forth. But he is currently a member of the board of directors of California Voting Voter Foundation and of Verified Voting. He's currently a computer scientist also at Lawrence Livermore National Laboratories, where he leads research in cybersecurity and simulation for national security applications. This guy is the real deal. And I've known David for a number of years, always wanted to get him on the radio to talk about some of this stuff. He has not been able to until now. And while we were hoping to have the actual hacker of the DC Internet voting system, instead, he couldn't make it because he had to testify today. David has been kind enough to jump in and join us here to talk about what we knew so far until today about this hack and what is to come. We've only got now, because I'm running late, I know, we only got 1 minute, so let me quickly welcome you. Dr. Jefferson, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir.
Thanks very much, Brad.
Okay.
Pleasure to be here.
Great to have you. Now, because I'm already running behind, we'll have to dig into the details after the break. But I wanted to find out from you first off, when I have been describing these findings as a bombshell, and I thought what we already knew was a bombshell, am I overstating it in calling this absolute bombshell?
I don't think so. These were stunning revelations today, and they were really surprising. They've also been kept quiet for most of the last week. They were just revealed today.
Those stunning revelations are coming up straight ahead after this break. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, speaking with Dr. David Jefferson from Livermore Labs about the DC Internet vote hack. More straight ahead.
Little black boxes in cute little rows, a screen that says touch me so cheerfully glows, no paper trail, a make-believe poll, cast your vote down the memory hole. Little black box where your little vote goes, down and down the memory hole, oh where did your little vote go? Nobody knows.
No,
little
they don't. They don't know. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy. And one person who knows we don't know is Dr. David Jefferson from Livermore National Laboratories joins us here tonight to talk about these, and also from verifiedvoting.org, to talk about this DC Internet vote scheme that was hacked, that was set to go live in the November elections, where you were going to have live voters using this, military and overseas voters using this. To their credit, the D.C. Elections Board opened this up and said, hey, let's test this just days before we do it. Anybody can hack it? Come on, show us. We think it's secure. And what do you know? Within days, the test server, when people went to vote, they started hearing the University of Michigan fight song playing at the end of their test voting process. And thankfully, what has happened has killed the entire plan for the internet voting scheme out there in D.C. And we're going to get into the details of what we have already learned this week and then some new bombshells with Dr. Jefferson. All right. David, one of the, well, let me just read what Alex Halderman, he was the assistant professor at University of Michigan who led a team of students to hack this system, essentially. He writes, within 36 hours of the system going live, our team had found and exploited a vulnerability that gave us almost total control of the server software, including the ability to change votes and reveal voters' secret ballots. They did this in a day's time. Would you like, can you first, before we get to the unreported bombshells, expand on what he said he did here?
Well, so he did a couple of things. He initially was able to exploit the fact that the network, as it was being set up, had not been properly configured, and one of the passwords for a major switch in the system had been left at the manufacturer's default, and they just figured that out. And that allowed them to watch all of the subsequent traffic that the officials and their IT staff were were doing.
And that was just a four
period.
And that was just a four letter or four number or four letter password, the default password.
It was. That's right. It was a four letter password. It was also printed in the manual.
Okay, so he was able to. They were able to get in short order. And what did they do first once they were in?
Well, the second thing they did after getting control of that switch was to get control of the web server and the back end database that stores ballots, and that allowed them to look around, find out what files were there, examine the ballots. They were able to find the public key, one of the two keys involved in the cryptography for storing ballots and so on. They were able to find that key. That allowed them to manufacture phony ballots. So they actually replaced all of the real ballots that had been cast by test voters before they had succeeded in the break-in. They replaced them with phony ballots of their own creation.
They just they changed them, and they actually put in whoever they wanted in as a write-in vote, right?
That's correct. And in fact, they wrote in the names of, I think, famous movie robots.
Science fiction robots. But they had changed all of the cast ballots to anything they want, as I understand it.
They did that, and further they left some code around so that all subsequent ballots that were cast by test voters would also get changed to this same ballot of their creation. So no legitimate ballots that were cast remained in the test.
And so this means, even without them hanging around personally and doing it, if future voters came in, those ballots would also be changed.
That's correct. Exactly.
They were able to, and you had mentioned the cryptography key, and that's something that I hear a lot of times from folks who do support the idea of computerized voting, whether it's on touchscreen systems or internet voting, as we're insanely talking about here and looking at in America's immediate future. You hear people talking about cryptography. As long as there's cryptography on there, there's nothing to worry about. It's military-grade cryptography. Everything is fine. Not so.
No, not even close to so, not even remotely so. There are a few things that you can do with cryptography that are important for security, and where it's done and it solves pieces. I mean, if the general security problem for election, might be characterized as having 100 parts, cryptography can strongly solve 3 or 4 of them. But there are the other 96 parts for which cryptography doesn't do anything. And those and that's where you attack.
And additionally, now then they finally left a calling card. They left the University of Michigan fight song playing after you completed your vote. There would be like a 15-second delay, and the fight song would play. And yet, the folks who are monitoring this test, the election officials, how many days did it take them to notice that their system had been thoroughly hacked?
Well, there's a little confusion about this because they haven't been quite very forthcoming about that. They claim to have noticed it. They claim to have known that they were attacked the next day after it started. But it isn't clear what they knew. It isn't clear whether they had noticed the fight song. It isn't clear whether they had estimated the full dimensions of the attack. However, they did not take the system down, actually, until Friday afternoon, about 3 days later.
And I love that he said, we're taking it down for usability reasons. Okay, so this we now know. It came out this week. It helped to stop this plan, this insane plan to actually use this system to have troops, overseas troops and overseas voters use this system. But you discovered, before we get to the new bombshells that Alex Halderman testified to today in a committee room, by the way, in D.C., the D.C. elections,
City Council,
which, by the way, there was one person, I think, questioning him. There was nobody in the audience. I couldn't believe that nobody seemed to give a damn about this. All right. Very quickly, before we get to the new bombshells we learned today, you also tested this system yourself, and you discovered what, David Jefferson?
Well, I discovered a serious flaw in the test system. If you the way it was supposed to work is that you would connect to their website, a PDF file would be displayed to you, which displays your blank ballot. You were supposed to mark it with your mouse. You were supposed to save that file with your vote marks in it. And then the last step was to upload it, that is to say, send it back to Washington, D.C. officials.
So you have filled out, the voter would fill out their ballot in their in their browser and save the file and send it along, email it as an attachment,
it
right?
Wasn't email, no. You
okay.
Though that would not have mattered, no, but it was back through the browser.
Okay.
But so I did all of that as directed, as because I was learning how to use the system.
Right.
After submitting the vote back, the ballot was still on my desktop as a file, so I opened it, and I discovered that all the votes had disappeared. They had been, I had a blank ballot, which means that I had sent a blank ballot back to the District of Columbia, not the choices that I had made. And I investigated further and discovered that, that anyone who used certain combinations of browsers and what we call PDF plugins would have the same problem. In fact, unless you used a particular PDF plugin, Adobe Reader, which many people are familiar with and many people use, but many don't.
Right.
Unless you used that, you were pretty much guaranteed that your votes would be erased the moment you saved them, and you would be disenfranchised.
And we would end up with thousands of blank votes, and they would tell us afterwards when we complained about this, they would say, "Oh well, the voters didn't follow the instructions, or they didn't want to vote, or the voters are so angry this year that they're making a statement by sending in blank ballots." Anybody who says otherwise is a conspiracy theorist, and the election would have stood.
Well, we're not. I don't want to go. I don't know what they would have done, but it was a very serious problem because I actually did follow directions. I did not do anything wrong, and many voters would have had this same problem. Not thousands, because honestly, they only expected at most 1,000 votes total
in this test, right?
In the real election.
Real election, no, right.
Yeah, because that's how many overseas and military voters the district has registered. Well, but even so, a large proportion of them would have unknowingly cast blank ballots. And once you do that, there's no recovery because you can't vote twice, and the election officials are not supposed to be able to find your ballot and fix it. So.
Right. You might not want to say what would have happened, but I've seen it in election after election after election from, you know, New Mexico 2004, Sarasota 2006. All of these ballots come up on touchscreen systems, not even internet systems. And they say, the voter just didn't follow directions. All right, I got to move on because we're coming up on a break, and I want to get to, we got about three bombshells that came out today. Let's play this first one. Now, remember, David Jefferson from Livermore National Laboratories and Verified Voting has said that the hackers in this D.C. internet voting test were able to take over the passwords and wreak all sorts of havoc. But here is what else they found out. Here is Alex Holderman testifying today in D.C.
So we weren't the only ones, though, who were trying to attack the BOEE network infrastructure. While we were in control of these systems, we observed other attack attempts originating from computers in Iran and China. These attackers were attempting to guess the same master password that we did, and since it was only four letters long, they would likely have soon succeeded. So we decided to defend the network by blocking them out, by adding rules to the firewall, and by changing the password to a more secure one.
You changed the password of the BOE system.
Of the pilot system,
right.
Yes.
You changed it.
We did, yeah, to something so that the Chinese and Iranian attackers wouldn't get it.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. China and Iranian hackers were also trying to access this system. And Alex Holderman, God love him, a white hat hacker here, if I understand it, he actually changed the password to keep the other hackers from getting into this system, right?
And the firewall. Yeah, so let me give you a little background on this. Many of us have been arguing that election security is a matter of U.S. national security. Oftentimes, you know, the difference between one or another candidate for United States Senator, say, you know, is only a few hundred votes. And so it's really important that it not be possible for foreign governments or crazy self-aggrandizing hackers in other countries or in our own to be able to modify votes and get away with it. So, but usually this warning that I have given many times that this is a national security issue goes, well, people are somewhat skeptical about it, and it goes underappreciated. So here we have a case where not even a real election, just a test election, but announced as open to all comers to try to hack. Alex Halderman finds that not one but two teams from national rivals of the United States, Iran and China, are already trying to probe around inside it.
And that was, and I got to get to a break, we're speaking with Dr. David Jefferson of Livermore National Laboratories about this D.C. internet vote hack. It was a test system, but it was to be a live election that was to start within days for the November election. And to your credit, sir, you were the first one to bring it to my attention many years ago that this is indeed a national security issue. It's not about Republicans. It's not about Democrats, independents, anybody else. It's about national security. We're back with more bombshells still to come. David Jefferson of Livermore National Labs on the D.C. internet vote hack right after this.
What is wrong? And the evidence is clear. I'm not alone. There are thousands of us here. This is my democracy. You won't go telling me my vote don't matter anymore. And is not worth fighting for.
Fighting for your vote, be you Republican, Democratic, Party, independent, I don't care. I think your vote ought to be counted and counted accurately and transparently so that we know that it is. We are speaking about this, frankly, stunning hack of the D.C. internet voting system that was planned to go live before hackers, as it turns out, good guy, white hat hackers, took the entire system over, changed all the ballots, put in write-in entries, put a password so that people could, so the ballots could be changed in the future. They were able to see how specific people voted, so the secret ballot was lost. And as we have just heard, he wasn't the only one. The team from University of Michigan wasn't the only one hacking this system. Also, hackers from Iran and China. And our good guy hacker, Alex Halderman, changed the password so the Iranians and Chinese couldn't get in. David Jefferson. But we got more bombshells coming up now on this that we're just now learning. Quick question from the chat room from Emily for David Jefferson, who is my guest here, cybersecurity expert, computer scientist from Livermore Labs and verifiedvoting.org. Emily wants to know, why did they shut out the Iranian and Chinese hackers, David?
Well, I think it's very important that they did so. For one thing, it might have been that the Iranian or Chinese hackers, had they had a chance, would have shut them out, and the consequences could have been much more serious. But secondly, I think they felt that it was an important duty that they had, that they know about this, and they had to protect this experiment in this voting system. I think they did the right thing.
And there was, two other major pieces we learned today. One was that the hackers here were also, and this is just, I don't know if it's funny, scary, I don't know, David Jefferson, but were able to take over the cameras, the security cameras, right?
That's right. The security cameras are digital cameras. They were on the same switch as all of the other equipment in the data center, and they were able to watch from Michigan the D.C. personnel walk around and do things at the keyboard in the data center. I don't think there are any important consequences of this right now, but if they, you know, if they were trying to burglarize the place, it would be nice to know when somebody was there and when it wasn't.
Well, Halderman actually testified today that they were able to see the password being typed in by employees there. All right, we only have 2 minutes here, so we're going to have to. Can we fit this in 2 minutes? This last big terrifying chunk, David
Go
Jefferson.
For it.
All right.
Go for it.
Well, we'll set it up. He discovered that the elections officials were doing tests of their own before the testing started, and apparently they were testing it out by sending incorrect files, files that were too large or too small to actually be ballots. I'm understanding this correct.
Yep.
And they found a specific file that was used for the testing that was still on the system that they were able to get to, and he actually pulled it out dramatically today during the during the hearing. What was that file that he got access to? And hell, we don't know if China or Iran got to it or not.
Yeah, this was stunning. This was a file which contained over 900 letters addressed to voters who were to vote in the real general election, telling them what their voter ID and their PIN was that they were to use when they voted in the real election. And this file is, in a sense, the holy grail of voter security in the general election if this system were to be used in the general election. Of course, it's now not going to be. But had an adversary had a copy of that file, they would have been able to cast votes for the legitimate voters. And if they cast them ahead, their vote would be accepted as legitimate, and the actual legitimate voters, when they tried to vote, would be denied because, of course, you can't vote twice.
Dr. David Jefferson from Livermore National Laboratories and Verified Voting, thank you, sir. Liz Winstead ahead and more on this right after this. Friedman in for Mike Malloy, Brad of bradblog.com, where there is a lively chat going on. Boy, and if you didn't hear that last hour with Dr. David Jefferson from Livermore Labs, we will have it up tonight. I hope you have, by the way, a podcast subscription to The Mike Malloy Show. You can get one over at MikeMalloy.com. Support Progressive Radio. Support what he does. If only because he allows me to come on here when he's taking the day off and talk to you all about stuff that doesn't get out on the airwaves very frequently. He'll be back with Kathy on Monday. Until then, you got me, and Liz Winstead, co-creator of Daily Show, will be joining us shortly. If you want to get in questions for her, you can get in early, 877-520-1150. That's 877-520-1150. She's going to bring the funny to help us get over that last hour. She's going to be with us for the entire hour, so get in now. But if you didn't hear that last hour, if you don't have a subscription to Mike Malloy's podcast, I hope you'll get one. But if you won't or can't, I will have the audio archives posted at bradblog.com late tonight so you can listen to that hour hearing about the live internet vote that was about to happen. And this, by the way, was done with federal money because we now have the Military and Overseas Voter Empowerment Act, which has once again put in millions and millions of dollars to encourage these pilot programs for internet voting all around the country. D.C. did it. They were the first ones. They're not the first ones to do it, but they were the first ones to open it up to testers, to open testing. And what did we find? As we talked about in that last hour, you know, within 36 hours, the good guy hackers had taken, white hat hackers had taken control of the complete system. They saw how everyone voted. They changed every single ballot. They put a script on there to change future ballots. And as we revealed tonight on the Mike Malloy program, the first time reported, as we learned this morning, that that hacker, Alex Halderman, wasn't the only one hacking that system. He also saw Iran hackers from Iran and China doing the same thing. For all you Republicans who don't care about this issue, Iran and China were hacking the system. And our good guy hacker actually changed the password that he had already had access to. He changed it to make it harder for the Iranians and the Chinese to get in. I hate coming on to this show and every other show and bradblog.com and reporting these stories again and again and again. But if I don't, who will? And, oh, by the way, this Alex Halderman, assistant professor up at University of Michigan who hacked the D.C. internet voting system, a few weeks ago, he hacked a touchscreen system by putting Pac-Man on it without breaking the tamper evidence seals. You know, the tamper seals, they say, oh, yeah, if there's anybody intrudes on these systems, why, we'd be able to see it, the elections officials will tell you. Wrong. He was able to put Pac-Man on a touchscreen system, a Sequoia touchscreen system. Not an internet system, mind you, but a Sequoia touchscreen system, the same type that is used all across the country. Some years ago, when a Diebold insider gave me a Diebold touchscreen system, I gave it to folks at Princeton. He, at the time, was a student there, and he was on the team that was able to hack that system, that Diebold touchscreen system, for the first time, such that it changed the results of any election, could pass itself from machine to machine to machine, flip an entire election without detection on a touchscreen voting machine, all of which are 100% unverifiable voting systems. Even if they have that little paper tape coming off of it, unverifiable, 100%. Don't kid yourself. They should never be used. If you're forced to use the touchscreen system in your town, your locality this November, don't do it. Find out if you have the right to have a paper ballot. If so, use it at the polling place on election day. If not, ask for an absentee ballot if you must. Vote by mail is a terrible idea because you also put it in a black box, the post office box, and then it gets counted or not by computers. Even if you have a paper ballot hand-marked on election day, it gets counted by computers in 98% of this country. That is an outrage. That is an outrage because we know, we have seen it before our eyes, and I keep telling you, even those paper ballots on an optical scanner, you can flip the results of the election and no one will notice unless you count the paper. All right. Liz coming soon to bring the funny? Is she coming soon to bring the funny? You know what happened? Because they tested it in D.C. for the first time. They never tested anywhere else. The systems that you're using, you know, I had to get a whistleblower to give me a machine to test because these companies, Sequoia, Diebold, Dominion, ESNS, the largest in the world, they don't let people do it. And this is your democracy. And we're all talking about what's going to happen this November. And by the way, next hour, you get to call and tell me what's going to happen. You get to tell me how I should vote and why or if. But these are about to be used all across the country. And we're fighting, yelling and screaming. Oh, Jim DeMint said this. Oh, Meg Whitman said that. If we can't count the votes, if citizens can't oversee their own democracy, we don't have self-governance. If we don't know that votes are, it doesn't matter if they're counted accurately. What matters is, do we know if they are counted? Can we know if they are counted accurately? Ask your election official about that. And then feel free to drop me a line via Twitter in 140 characters at the Brad blog, what they had to say. And I'll try to tell you how they are either lying to you or they don't know any better. What David Jefferson was trying to say at the very end of the hour was that the hackers were able to find the file on this test system, the actual live file, 900-something pages of codes that were already sent to voters that had their special secret ID on them. And they would need that ID in order to vote on the internet in this live election in a couple of days. The hacker was able to get at that file, and it means anybody else could, and it means they could then vote for whoever they wanted because they had the security numbers. And then when the real people tried to vote, they would be told, oh, sorry, you already voted. Don't know what it takes. But anyway, Liz Winstead, the co-creator of The Daily Show, she's going to join me and cheer me up, please. And we'll take your calls for her as well. 877-520-1150. Talk about the upcoming rally to restore sanity. Oh, that'll be good. Out in D.C. on October 30th. And will Liz be there? I think she damn well should be. Because she doesn't work on the show anymore. But I think it's high time she appears up there on the stage with Jon Stewart in October. Are you going? How about the rally to restore hate? No, to keep hate alive. That's Colbert's. That sounds good. Get some Republicans can go out there and talk about the mosque, Ground Zero. What happened to that Ground Zero mosque? I thought that was a national security issue that was going to take us all down. I haven't heard much about that lately. Wonder why. Because nobody cares, because it was a phony issue, just like all the other ones. All right, Brad in from Molloy. Coming back with Liz Winstead. Your calls, 877-520-1150. Liz knows what that means. Friday night here on the Mike Molloy Show. Brad in for Mike. He'll be back next week. Until then, you got me. And here I am trying to cheer myself up after that last hour. I need it. And someone who I know is going to cheer it up for me and for you. And if you want to talk to her, get in now. 877-520-1150 is our phone number. Letting her dance, the comedian extraordinaire and the co-creator and head writer of Comedy Central's The Daily Show. She's also the founding host on Air America with a little morning show called Unfiltered, co-hosted with some girl named Rachel Maddow. Don't know whatever happened to her. Anyway, she's currently touring the country with her own show, My State of the Union, An Evening with Liz Winstead. And, of course, ever since Las Vegas this past summer, she is my new BFF. Hey, Liz, welcome to the Mike Molloy Show, Liz Winstead.
Hi, darling, and a pie gal to you.
Now, I realize here that we can bribe each other because of what happened, blackmail each other because of what happened in Vegas.
Oh, my God, there was so much drunken embarrassment. You know, it was so funny because you and I had... I can speak for myself to say that I had admired your work for quite some time, but we had never had the occasion to actually meet in person. And so when we all got together for dinner, and it was so fun because it was you and it was Nicole Sandler and it was Jason.
Jason Leopold.
And it was just this whole group, and Shannon Moore. And we just all connected so profoundly that I had some kind of sense of trust, which led me to drink a lot and dance on tables and then give you the sit at a poker table with you and have you tell me what to do. Although I did walk away breaking even, which was completely excellent.
See, there, I told you. It's not all that hard. And by the way, I don't want to leave out Jeannie Devon was hanging with us.
Jeannie was with us.
Yeah, a.k.a. Muckraker from Mudflats up there in Alaska.
Yep.
And by the way, are you in the Capitol building or in a subway tunnel? Because,
you know, it's crazy. Is it really awful?
No, it's actually kind of fun.
Here's the deal, that my dogs will bark incessantly through the whole interview.
Yeah.
And I live in a big loft building, or a big loft space, and there's nowhere for me to put the dogs. There's only a place for me to go, and I don't want to pace the hallways talking on the radio. So I'm in the stairwell of the radio, of the apartment building, like a crazy person. I got a glass of wine, and I'm in the stairwell.
Well, because I was going to say either that or it's a really, really huge loft. But that's okay. I think we can tolerate it. Tony, we can tolerate it, right? Yeah, it's actually kind of cool. It gives you a certain gravitas, a certain authority. As a matter of fact,
I kind of feel like I'm the Pope. Yeah. I'm actually in the Vatican. I'm in the boy room at the Vatican.
Speaking
boy
to
bar.
Us straight from the Basilica, Liz Winstead tonight.
I know.
It's
in the dome.
So it is fine. Don't worry about it. We really did have a great time out there in Vegas, and it was like we were fast friends after that. I felt like I had known you for some time, and I had only met you minutes earlier. But
I felt that way, too.
But I will say this. If you don't answer all of my questions, I hate to embarrass you here by going into details of exactly what you were seen doing very publicly on a table in a casino bar in Vegas. But I will post that picture if I need to, Liz.
Shannon Moore has video of it.
Video!
And I don't even know what the song was that I was dancing to, but I was dancing on a table.
Yeah. Yes, you were.
And I sure don't remember to what, but you have a picture. Shannon has all the really the blackmail tape. I say let it rip. There's so many worse things that I've said and done. It's at this point, at this point, none of it really even matters. A, I don't want to run for public office.
Yeah.
B, I openly talk about the fact that I've had an abortion. And C, it's kind of like all that happens is that no matter what you say, the right wing just attacks me by calling me a whore anyway. And so I might as well, if they're going to call me a whore, I might as well act like one. It's like Obama. You know what? If they're going to call you a socialist, then give us universal health care. You might as well go for it.
Well, that sounds like a plan. Speaking with Liz Winstead, the whore from the Basilica, who is joining us. 877.
So are you going to call me Mary Magdalene?
We'll see what we end up calling you. You can get through to this show. She's going to be with us for the hour on a Friday night, 877-520-1150. If you have questions for the co-creator of The Daily Show, and I have some Daily Show questions. We got a minute till the break. Okay. Let's see, which ones of these can I fit in? Because I really want to know, very quickly, how did you come up with the idea to do The Daily Show, which, by the way, when I first saw it so many years ago, I thought, what an odd name for a show, The Daily Show? How did you come up with that name, and why?
We came up with the name because it was on every day, and we wanted to have the name, and so The Daily Show was the first thing that came to mind, but also because we didn't want to have, like, a wacky name or something that felt like you would get sick of hearing it. Because it was on every day, you just didn't want to get sick of the name, and you also didn't want to have a name that they can also screw with in the press as they will if your show sucks. It's like, wow, indecent exposure, it's indecently awful, or however they do things when they review you. So we want it to be as simple as possible and to feel as organic as news shows, sort of when they name themselves, it's like the news at 4. So we just wanted to keep it as simple as possible so the comedy could speak for itself.
So it was, so Craig Kilborn's wacky Laugh-a-Palooza was right out. That was not going to be the... Okay.
No, and his name was not on the show.
That's right. It wasn't. Well, it wasn't The Daily Show with Craig Kilborn, was it?
No, it was just The Daily Show.
Okay. But then it changed. Now, when?
Then it changed.
When did you? I know you left. You were there when Jon Stewart came in, and then you left a couple of years later, right?
No. I left right when Jon Stewart came in. Nothing to do with Jon.
Yeah, right.
And then he asked me to come back twice.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
And it was kind of like I just said, as much as I'd like to come back and it would be a steady job and be awesome, you are doing a great job, A, and B, there needs to be more than just your voice out there.
Okay, hang on. I got to take a break. Liz Winstead, Mike Malloy Show. We'll be back.
So I bought me a ride down to Macon, Georgia on an overloaded poultry truck. I thumbed on down to Panama City, started picking out some of them all night. Bright light said it gonna set my soul, gonna set my soul on fire. Got a whole lot of money that's ready to burn, so get those stakes up higher. There's a thousand pretty women waiting out there. They're all living the devil may care, and I am just a devil with love to spare. So Viva Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Viva Las Vegas.
See, that was easy. I've cheered myself up already from that first hour, which you can get over at Brad Blog tonight. We're going to be posting those archives and scare the hell out of you for your weekend and for your November election. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, who will be back with you next week. But tonight, I got on a Friday night a drunk, echoey Liz Winstead, co-creator of The Daily Show. Out in the, you hear that? It sounds, you sound like I'm talking to God. I like it. 87, if you want to get in, by the way, to ask Liz a question, or to make, or to tell us what you know she did in Vegas this summer, 877-520-1150. Okay, and I'm going to ask you about the big upcoming rallies and what your plans are for October 30th, Liz Winstead. But I sort of wanted to get in a few more thoughts here on The Daily Show. And if you're sick of talking about it, well, let me know, and I don't care. But did that first week, I want to say that when we met over the summer, I asked you about that first initially. There was no audience for The Daily Show, was there?
There was no audience, no. Which, because we wanted to stick as true as we could to the, you know, the sort of news format without an audience, and the show had this sort of dead feel to it, and we brought an audience in like the second week. I think there was only like a whole week of like four shows where there was no audience, and then we added an audience, and the energy level of the whole room completely changed.
It did, but I got to tell you, I kind of liked it.
You loved it without.
I did.
Many people loved it without.
Because it was so weird.
It was so weird. Well, you were like, what is this? It's performance art.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Now, do you, of course, folks in the chat room want to know if you have any we'll move up to John Stewart in a second, but any dish you'd like to share on your friend Craig Kilborn, and whatever happened to him, by the way?
You know, it's a mystery what happened to him. I'm not sure. He went over to CBS.
Yeah.
And he had a late night show there, I guess.
Yeah.
And then he quit that so he could write and produce.
Did he quit that show?
Now Craig Ferguson is the host.
Now you guys, but I didn't know if he quit or if he was fired. But you guys were famously, you had a strange relationship, didn't you?
We did. It was very interesting. Let's just put it that way.
Okay. But with John Stewart, now were you responsible in any way for bringing on John Stewart to the show?
Well, John was our initial pick for The Daily Show.
Really?
But he was on, because I had worked on, he had a syndicated show before The Daily Show, and I had worked on him with that show, and we wrote a pilot together, and we'd hosted shows together, and John and I have been long-time friends. And so John, after his syndicated show, which I was a producer on, got canceled, John went under contract with Letterman's company for a couple of years.
Uh-huh.
And so he was unable to be the host of the show, because he was under contract. So we went out on a hunt, and the network loved Craig Kilborn, and so Craig Kilborn was the first host. And so then when John took over, he asked me to come back, and like I said, you know what? You got this covered, dude. Like, run with it, and I'm going to try to get other stuff on the air. And then got Air America up and running, which was kind of fun.
Yeah.
Launched a Senator and Rachel Maddow out of that deal, so I can't complain about that.
Yeah.
And then did an off-Broadway show for 2 years, and now I'm back doing this one-person theater show and hosting on the radio and blah, blah, blah.
Well, and blah, blah, blah. And thanks. I didn't know that Stewart was supposed to be originally supposed to be the host. And I want to talk about your lovely evening with Liz Winstead in a second. But did he... Did you ever envision that the show would become what it has? Because I will argue that I think it's an important show, and it's unbelievably seriously relevant to U.S. politics every day. Could you have ever imagined it would have that kind of an impact that it now has?
Well, you know, it's funny. I knew that because when we launched, there was just CNN.
Uh-huh.
So we launched in July of 1996, early July.
There was no Fox?
Well, here's what happened. 2 weeks later, MSNBC launched.
Right.
So end of July of 96. October, Fox launched. So in 96, all of a sudden, there was this explosion of 24-hour news that I knew just from CNN. I had done a one-woman show just about the media selling the war, the first Gulf War.
Uh-huh.
So I was paying attention to this, and I was seeing the way things were manipulated, and I thought, you know what? The public is going to get sick of this. And first, it was just sort of, you know, they would just sell us with, like, the shaking baby nanny and the O.J. trial and disappearing blondes.
Right.
And that's how they would fill their time. And then when the war happened, and then these news networks started happening, then that continued, but then escalated itself epically with the graphics and the whatever, and then all of a sudden the crazy bloated hot chicks and no fact-checking and all of that started happening. And I had a feeling that that the media aspect of the show was what was going to drive it because, you know, the media is a character in that show, and, you know, and I've always believed that the media is as responsible for this war and for everything that's going on as any politician because they sold it to us. They didn't fact check. They let it happen.
Yep.
Because they knew it was going to be beneficial to them for ratings to have this ongoing carnage happening so that they could dress it up and give it some graphics and give it a theme song and you know, parade out, you know, extract emotions out of the American people mm-hmm. in a profoundly awful way. And so I gave the public some credit, and I was right. So I didn't know that it was going to be as profound because I didn't know that the media would suck so hard. Like, I knew that they would suck. But the fact they suck so hard that it was like it's actually mind-blowing, as we all know.
It is, and it's only getting worse, isn't it,
yes.
Liz Winstead?
Every moment.
You would think with all the criticism, you would think with you out there, you guys out there making fun of them on a nightly basis on The Daily Show, you would think, hell, when Jon Stewart, I can't remember if he was, yeah, I guess you would have been gone from the show by then, but when Jon Stewart shows up on CNN and calls Tucker Carlson a dick and it ends up killing Crossfire, you would think they would get the message and it would get better, but it really hasn't, has it?
No, I mean, it's gotten even worse. And, you know, it's like we talk so much about Beck and Rush and the carnival barker nature of who they are. And sure, you know, they have huge ratings and they're horrible. But to me, when I look at the media, to me the more frightening and dangerous people are those that do not seem crazy but are so ill-equipped to take on our leaders who come on those shows and lie, and they'll blatantly say some falsehood or blatantly pass off something as a non-truth, the person has no capacity to combat it, and then it just lays there as fact. And
well,
that, to me, is scarier.
Well, yeah, and I always say this, particularly when I'm talking about, you know, these liars, Andrew Breitbart and James O'Keefe and these scam artists, you know, that we expect the Breitbarts and the O'Keefes, we expect them to be liars out there, but we expect, in theory, the media to be the gatekeepers to keep the bad guys from being bad and to keep the bad politicians from being bad.
Well, and let me tell you, Brett, I'll never forget how thoroughly shocked I was, and it's hard to be shocked by the media's ineptitude. But when the Betty Sherrod story broke, Shirley Sherrod story broke, and I watched at least three different shows mm-hmm. who didn't know who Andrew Breitbart was at that point. And I was like, you people buried Acorn ad nauseum.
Mm-hmm.
The only reason that you know about Acorn was because of Andrew Breitbart's shenanigans then.
Yep.
If you did not find out who he was through Acorn, you didn't even do any research. All you did was bury Acorn, didn't look into this guy at all. Now Betty Sherrod happens, and you still don't know who Andrew Breitbart is until right now? It was pathetic.
And they still... don't. That's what's amazing.
No.
And that's why I made a lot of noise earlier this year trying to get the New York Times to correct their reporting, because they had, you know, after O'Keefe was arrested down there in Louisiana for trying to scam this U.S. senator and access her phone lines, Mary Landrieu in Louisiana, I said, look, media, you already screwed up the Acorn story. James O'Keefe never dressed as a pimp. He never represented himself as a pimp. And you guys never reported that to anybody. So now, please correct your reporting. Eventually, I got New York Times to issue a correction, but for the most part, most people still don't know. They still don't understand that it was a scam. So when the Shirley Sherrod thing happens, they just run with it. They never learn.
Run with it? Never. Not only do they never learn, I think they can't run a correction, because they would have to run corrections constantly, and they would have to correct themselves out of a job. And the shame and the egg on their faces every day when I get up and I watch these morning shows, and I watch it all day, because, I mean, for me to get my information, I have to do it twofold. I have to read what the information that makes me smarter, and then I have to watch the information that makes America dumber. Because you can't have one without the other. I need to know what's going on, but I also need to know how America really gets their stuff. I mean, if America got their stuff every day, woke up and got a taste of you and your fact-checking and some of these great internet journalists, we would be in a better place. But sadly, they don't. Sadly, they wake up and they watch, you know, Morning Joe, or they watch something else, and it's astounding how you just see Pat Buchanan and all these people, and there's plagiarists a-go-go on their panel, and you're just like, what is this? What am I watching? I'm watching Mika Brzezinski stare at Joe Scarborough like she has Stockholm Syndrome, and then I watch Joe Scarborough go, I'm a moderate, and then say something horribly right-wingy, and I just watch it all unfold, and I think, these people are here held captive against their will, and now they fall in love with their captor, and I'm watching a psychological weird Ibsen thing play out, and it's fascinating.
Liz Winstead, you can get in on the conversation if you like. 877-520-1150. That is 877-520-1150. We've got to get to a break momentarily, but Liz, a big rally coming up. Two big rallies, I suppose, out there, October 30th. And I think there's actually three big rallies, because you have your own plans for October 30th in D.C.,
That's right. I will be going to the rally, I will be going to the big rally for sanity. And then afterwards, I am going to be doing two shows where you can sit down, have some booze in a civilized setting, and I am going to continue the sanity with my one-woman show, My State of the Union, which is a really fun recap of the day's news and events. And so while the rally for sanity will be sort of an overreaching overview of hey, people, wake up, these people are nuts, I'm going to be really focusing on the headlines of that week and doing some hopefully hard-hitting satire. Well, you can sit back and drink and have some fun, and you can find all the tickets on my website, which is lizwinstead.com. You can go to tickets and find out all the details.
And that's Liz with two Z's. Are you going to...
Double Z.
Double Z. Are you going to appear in the actual rally? Are you going to speak on stage in some fashion?
About that, I don't know how much I will be writing, actually, because I think I want to talk about the rally on stage, so I might have to be an observer and
I
not
see.
Speak.
Okay, fair enough. Liz Winstead, co-creator of The Daily Show, she's going to be with us here for one more segment, so we're going to get to your calls right after this. 877-520-1150. If you have a question for Liz, Brad, in for Malloy, more ahead.
Seems so good.
Oh, I love you, Liz Winstead. Brad Friedman in for the mic, in for on from what is this? The Mike Malloy Show. I love you, Liz. We're speaking with Liz Winstead, co-creator of The Daily Show, and a muckraker and a troublemaker after my heart. We're going to take your calls at 877-520-1150. You can get information on Liz Winstead's tour of her one-woman show, I guess, right? No, nobody else other than
I am the woman. It's me, and it's me.
And will you be echoing there as well in the show that you're...
I might have to. I kind of feel powerful when I'm in this big space.
You should.
Actually, I should take a picture of where I am right now so that you can and post it to you so you
please
can see it. It's
or,
so pathetic.
Or Twitter it. By the way, I recommend Liz's Twitter feed at Liz Winstead and also her website, LizWinstead.com, where you can get information on her tour. Among her stops is D.C. on October 30th after the rallies, which I think could make a profound difference this November, maybe. We'll find out her thoughts on that in a second. But let me, if I keep talking with her, we'll never get in a call. So let's go to Jeff in Columbia, Tennessee. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Jeff.
Hey, I was just calling to tell Liz that I listen to her. Used to listen to her every morning on Air America.
Oh.
My dog hates you, though.
Oh, your dog hates me? You know, my dog hates me, too, which is why I am in this echo chamber, because when I talk and I get all crazy, yeah, both the dogs start barking wildly. So I'm in the hallway of my building.
Jeff, why does your dog hate Liz?
Well, because I deliver at the General Motors plant up here, and they get done about 9:30 Central Time, and I have to run down, park my truck, run home, turn on the Daily Show, and my dog has to wait 30 minutes before he can go out. So if he ends up with some kind of bladder infection or something like that, it's your fault.
Oh, okay, Meg Whitman. What am I? You know, now you sound like Meg Whitman blaming Jerry Brown.
I did not hire the dog. It could be worse. You could put a spell on me like Christine O'Donnell could.
I know. I believe in. I could do that when I'm done masturbating.
thanks for the call, Jeff. I appreciate it. Well, you know, it is the Malloy Show. You can get away with any number of things. You got any thoughts, Liz, on, you know, forget your thoughts. I don't care about your thoughts. I want your information, Liz. Do you have any inside skinny on what is actually going to happen out there in D.C. on October 30th? And because I'm wondering, will it actually make any difference?
I do think it will.
In November?
You know, You know, it's funny. I should go to the mic almost. Brad, here's what I find. I think that the left doesn't respond to Rush and Beck. You know, that is a thing. You know, people who respond to fear and rally to fear and don't need facts, they respond to those people. And basically what they don't understand is they're being manipulated just to continue to listen and watch them instead of actually calling to action. You go to a rally, what do you do now? You can't do anything now because you've not been given any information that constitutes policy or moving forward. Where I think the left really responds to people who can... are firebrands that throw out, expose hypocrisy, support ideas, ask questions, and then when you can do it through humor, I really think that people are going to come out and they're going to be motivated because they're going to see hundreds of thousands of people who are going to be part of the enthusiasm gap that doesn't exist, and they're going to realize, geez, Louise, we have to vote. And then maybe, and this is the part that gets tricky, is I'm personally completely sick of handing over my vote to Democrats who do not have a progressive agenda. And they get away with it, and we vote for them. It's time now that we, as people who are, you know, voices in the world, demand that this is kind of the last time you're going to get our vote.
And that's...
now you're going to have to start working for us and start working for the good and not for the corporations anymore, because they're just as bad as the Republicans in
that
regard.
Well, good kickoff for the next hour, because I'm going to ask people who I should vote for, if I should vote, why I should vote for them in the next hour. Liz Winstead, you rock, baby. I thank you for...
You rock more. You come coming to D.C.?
No, I don't travel much. You know that.
I know, I'm coming to L.A., I think, in March.
Well, okay.
Plenty of dates for us.
Well, get those dates at LizWinstead.com with two Z's. Don't be fooled. Go to the original, LizWinstead.com, for her own show. She's coming to a town near you, and you better let me know when you are coming to L.A.
Lizzie. You bet I will, babe.
Thank you, dear. All right, much Thanks. More straight ahead on The Molloy Show. Brad in for Mike. Show. Brad Friedman, your friendly citizen blogger, investigative journalist, troublemaker, muckraker from bradblog.com, taking it home here on a Friday night as the sun sets across these United States, actually down out here on the West Coast in Los Angeles from where we are now broadcasting, or as we like to say, from where we are now broadcasting. And so it has gone dark in these United States, with my apologies to our friends up there in Alaska and Hawaii, where it's still, hopefully, a beautiful day. We're going to get to your calls here this hour at 877-520-1150, 877-520-1150. And, oh, I should add, while I am Brad in for Mike, Mike and Kathy will both be back here next Monday. I think with the Molloy Vision fired up, but that's just a guess. Okay. You can also join our chat room for this last hour of the broadcast tonight at bradblog.com, where Jeannie Dean and Desi Doyen are holding down the fort. I'm peeking in every now and again. Nobody's gotten naked yet, but there are a lot of drunk people. So you'll want to stop by there right away and say hello. It really is a good chat room with some real cool folks. And all the Molloy folks have come on over from their usual haunt to haunt us instead. Here's what I want to ask you guys about and what I'd like you to call in and tell me about at 877-520-1150. You know, this may be the last time I am on the air here for Mike before the election coming up. And, you know, people who know me, who know Brad Blog, know that one of the things, obviously, I report on is a lot about our election system and our voting machines and so forth. And one of the things I've heard over the years is largely from Democrats, actually, usually elected official Democrats. But, you know, Democratic Party, those sort of insiders, they say, Brad, we don't want to talk about these voting machines because it will depress the vote. It will keep people from wanting to vote at all. They'll think the system doesn't work, so they won't show up. Now, what I have found is a very different thing. Is that when I talk about concerns about our election system, when I talk about fighting to make sure your vote is counted and counted accurately and that you can see it be counted, that it empowers people, it fires them up. They want to show up and vote, and they want to show up and vote and make sure their vote gets counted and work as a poll worker and work to change the system for the better. That's what I find. But occasionally I do hear from somebody who says, ah, you know what, this is crazy. I'm not going to vote at all. The system is so rigged. Forget about it. Or they'll say that, you know, why should I vote for Democrats? They're just as bad as the Republicans. They're in on the same. They're both, you know, if they're both as bad. Now, I don't think they're both as bad, frankly. They may be two sides of the same coin, but I think they're not both as bad. I think the Republicans these days, not in the old days, but these days are evil and or crazy. The Democrats are frightened, cowards, and just, you know, they don't know how to govern. They're just scared to death, and they have failed us. And, oh, yes, they are also corporatists, though I don't think not to the same extent that the Republicans are. But you know what? In the end, they've all got to dance to the same fiddler, if you will. They've all got to raise money from the same corporate interests, and that is only getting worse. And I'm actually going to have John Ennis here momentarily to talk about that. But, you know, what do we do now? The Republicans have failed us long ago. The Democrats have failed us, certainly for the last 4 years, in many ways. They've also succeeded in many ways. So my question is, who should I vote for? Should I vote Republican? Should I vote Democratic? Should I vote Independent? Should I vote at all? And why? And you can get your calls in at 877-520-1150 if you've got an opinion on that. But I want first, speaking of the corporatist takeover of our election systems, just for a few minutes here, I wanted to speak with John Wellington Ennis, because he's the director of an upcoming documentary called Pay to Play, Democracy's High Stakes. And it's about what has come of our electoral system following Citizens United, the Supreme Court decision that will live in infamy, I am sure, at least until it's overturned by, hopefully, a constitutional amendment at this time. John Ennis is also the filmmaker of the documentary of 2008's Free For All, One Dude's Quest to Save Democracy, which, by way of full disclosure, I was in, but it's still really, really good. Hey, John, how are you, sir?
I am so psyched to be here. Thanks for having me, Brad.
I'm delighted you can jump in because you're working. So the new film is Pay to Play, Democracy's High Stakes. Give us a real quick idea of what it's like, and then I want to tell folks how they can help you see this thing get done.
You bet. Well, you know, it actually ties in really nicely to what you've been saying, and shout out to Liz right before. You know, it's called pay to play with the number two because it's not just a pay to play system where people get elected and become beholden to their donors and then reward them with the state money, our money. But it's also because ultimately you're paying both parties to even get that chance. And mm-hmm. so ultimately these corporate vendors, it's ultimately, you know, a real pale version, one of the other. And so this documentary, besides getting into the Citizens United decision as well mm-hmm. as the group itself, which is a fascinating little shady history, I've also spent a lot of time in Ohio on the ground with candidates and outsiders, progressives, if you will, newcomers to the process, and showing the kind of travails that they go up against, where they need money at every turn, or the fact that other donors are turning against them and going with their opponent. And so the kind of struggle for these kinds of candidates is really the actual hope that I think that we have when you're talking about what can we do for our what's left of our election process anyway. And it really is giving the opportunity and getting a lot more involved, because these people can keep spending tons and tons of money, foreign money, on these things, but uh-huh. it's just like other ads that stop working at some point and people go in another way.
I don't know if they will go another way. I think these ads ultimately do work. And, you know, when you were making in 2008 a free-for-all, One Dude's Quest to Save Democracy, which, by the way, is hysterical. It's interesting, it's frightening, and it's a hysterical film as you sort of go through and figure out what the hell has gone wrong with our election system and our voting machines and everything else. And people should look. You can go to freeforall.tv to check that out. I don't know. Is the film still free? Can you download it
sure
for free?
It sure is, actually. Yep.
All right. Well, you can get it there. I think you can also buy a DVD if you want. But who knew 2 years ago that now we would be looking at what happened with Citizens United? And it feels like the bottom has dropped out. It feels like, what hope is there, John Ennis?
Well, you know, I really think that, you know, yeah, it's going to drop, and it's going to drop a little bit more, and that's actually when that sort of outrage is happening. You know, the fact that this week, you know, with the Chamber of Commerce, you know, the fact that Think Progress is able to bust, that they've been taking foreign money from lots of different countries that
yeah.
I think some conservatives would have a great deal of issues with.
If they knew about it, John, they don't tell them on Fox News that we've got foreign countries who are now giving money to the Chamber of Commerce, who's putting it millions of dollars into our elections.
Well, you know, what's funny is that because the Democrats have been so weak on responding to anything, now that they're really, you know, being outraged 6-7-1, it's fascinating to see Obama come out swinging with this to the point where Roe had to respond. Mm-hmm. Rove, you know, said, you know, had to, you know, if Rove has to come out of his cave to smack something down, you know, you've touched a nerve.
Good.
And so he came out on Politico today and had to issue some response saying, oh, it's just, you know, he's so prone to mistakes and he really should be worrying about, you know, the millions of jobs that went away that he was supposed to deliver. And it's just so funny because, you know, I thought the millions of jobs were supposed to come from the tax cuts that they keep saying that they're going to put in. And it's really
the tax cuts that were already there for the last 8 years,
I know,
John.
And that's so funny. And they still call it the Bush tax cut. It's like, how are these people complaining that, like, oh, Obama's just taxed us to death? And it's like, wait, but it's the same taxes, people.
Let's help you get this film done. You can look at a preview of it, by the way, at pay2play. That's the number two, pay2play.tv. But you've also got a benefit out here in Los Angeles. If you happen to be out in the L.A. area, out in Santa Monica tomorrow night, I'm going to be coming by and saying a few words about something or other. I'm looking forward to it. It's at the, where are we here?
Yogi's Anonymous on 3rd Street Promenade, 1221 2nd Street, right at Arizona. And okay. It's 7:30. And you can get all the information at pay2play.tv. And Rick Overton's going to be rocking the house, comic, firebrand.
That's what I was going to say. I'll be saying a few lame words on this or that, and then Rick Overton will show up and kill. If you haven't seen Rick, he's a comedian's comedian, frankly, but a great political comedian, satirist. Come on by and say hello to me, if nothing else, at the Yogi's Anonymous tomorrow night. That's Saturday night, 7:30 p.m. You will be supporting independent media, namely John Wellington Ennis and his soon-to-be new documentary to be completed, we hope soon, called Pay to Play, Democracy's High Stakes. Hey, John Wellington Ennis, thanks for all you do. And by the way, your great work over the last several years at videothevote.org.
Oh, dude, thank you. Likewise. Such an honor. Thanks, man.
All right, brother. Go get him. We'll see you tomorrow night at Yogi's Anonymous.
Look forward to it. Thanks.
All right. We're going to be back with your calls at 877-520-1150. Who should I vote for? Democrats? Republicans? Indies? Nobody? And why? Let me know. Brad in from Alloy.
We sang every song that Javi knew. Freedom is just another word for nothing left to lose. The land is dark, and the moon is the only light we'll see.
Happy birthday, John, wherever you may be. John Lennon would have been 78 years old. 78? Is that right? I think it is. 78 years old today. All right, Brad Friedman, our final hour here in for Mike Malloy, 877-520-1150. Maybe my last chance to speak to you before the election, and I need to know, should I vote for Democrats? Should I vote for independents? Should I vote for Republicans? Should I not vote at all? And why? I would love to get your opinions on that. For, you know, after all, the Republicans have failed us. The Democrats have failed us in many ways. Is it realistic to vote for an independent? You know, that's one of the things I hate, actually. People say, well, why would you vote for an independent and waste your vote? Yeah. Waste your vote? You don't get a prize if you pick the guy who wins. It don't work that way. Express your voice if you want to. If you don't, don't. But you need to tell me what I should do. Let's take your calls, 877-520-1150. Let's go to Stephen in Burbank. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Stephen.
Hello, Brad. I'm going to go to the polls, and I'm going to vote. I'm going to vote for Brown and Boxer. The initiatives are all filled out exactly like they're supposed to be. However, on the 29th, we have what we might consider to be a blue dog. And there's no peace and freedom. There was no progressive Democrat in the primaries. He ran all by himself. And so I'm going to vote for the Libertarian. I'm going to send a sample ballot to the DNC. And I hope Schiff gets to keep the seat, but if they can see, like, maybe there was if he wins by 1%, he could have won by 4%.
Yeah.
Maybe it'll send a message. Who knows?
So you say you're going to send a sample ballot. You mean you're going to show them how you voted?
I will show them how I voted. And I tried to get Meg Whitman to give me $35,000 to vote for her, but she wouldn't do it. So what the heck?
So you're going to go down the line. You're going to vote for all of the Democrats that you feel are progressive, and then you're going to cross the line and go to a Libertarian to say, hey, I would have voted for this guy in the 29th had you put up anybody but a blue dog, right?
Well, there was nobody against him in the primary.
Right.
We could have looked at it and seen as being progressive.
Right.
And then there's no peace and freedom. All there is Republican, Democrat, and Libertarian. But that's okay because Dave Marsh accused me of being a Libertarian.
Green? No Green Party there, Steve?
Nothing. Okay. Just the three.
All right.
Just the three.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate your call. Let me go to... where am I here? John in Beverly Hills. Oh, a lot of California folks up late tonight. John, welcome to the Malloy Show. How should I vote, sir?
Well, I'd vote Democratic whenever possible because, the vice president said we need 60 votes now in the Senate in order to get something passed, and we only have 55 votes at this time.
But didn't they have 60 votes for a little while there already in the Senate?
I don't think they ever had 60 votes. We had 51, and I don't know how we ever got up to 55.
No. You had 60 Democrats, and we had 59 plus Joe Lieberman. So you had a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate. Not for long, because it took a while to get Al Franken in there, so they only had 59. But then they got 60. And then they lost one, but with Ted Kennedy, they had it for a while, and they sure had 59. That's a whole lot of Democrats. And did they deliver for you?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I think Obama's been doing the best he can with a terrible hand that he's been, handed. I mean, he's been dealt a terrible hand. And, he got, $29 billion for small business last week, and he tried to get transparency as to help out Citizens United, try to reverse some of the egregious results of that, where corporations can give unlimited money to candidates, which here in California, it's blatant. We can see it.
Uh-huh.
And, he's tried to get some things done. He's got some health care passed. We just started it, and now people are trying to repeal it. But I think the Lemon Pledge by the Republicans is going to come back to bite them. But I certainly hope that I think California will go Democrat as usual, because I think we're very progressive out here. But
thanks,
what about Ohio and Georgia with all their irregularities in their voting?
I'll talk about it after this break, John. I got to get out. Brad, in for Malloy. More of your calls straight ahead.
Well, I've been down so goddamn long that it looks like up to me. Well, I've been down so very damn long that it looks like up to me.
Okay. John Lennon would not have been 78 today. He would have been, he would have been 70, and it's not today, it's tomorrow. So I don't know why everybody is reporting that it's today. It's not. Who made that error? We have now issued a correction. We regret the error, and we apologize to the estate of John Lennon. October 9th, that would be tomorrow, his birthday would have been, and he would have been 70, not 78, as the Mike Malloy Show, guest hosted by Brad Friedman, incorrectly reported to you previously. 877-520-1150. Who should I vote for? Should I vote at all? And why? Bruce in Santa Paula.
Yeah,
welcome.
Hello, Brad.
Hey, Bruce.
I was thinking about, I'm just so glad I'm not a Nevadan. I mean, can you imagine having to choose between Harry Reid and Engel?
Oh, you got that right, brother. Oh, boy, howdy. Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's like, what do you do? I mean, you know, Reid is so ineffectual and such a, I don't want to use any words, it's going to get me kicked off the air, but you know what I might say.
I cannot believe that this guy is the majority leader. I mean, what a wuss.
Yeah.
That's all. So I hear you. All right, so you wouldn't know how to vote if you were in Nevada.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't. I mean, being in California, I know damn well I'm going to vote for Barbara Boxer, and I know damn well I'm not going to vote for Carly or the $120 million
woman.
Yeah, woman.
Meg Whitman, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, there's, and if we don't stand up and do what we think is best, you know, then we've lost it by default. So I say no matter how bad it is, you know, and even with the tampering with the election machines, the voting machines that we know about, you know, the only way to overcome that is to simply overwhelm it.
Well, that's one way that might work. But when you can flip the numbers with the flip of a switch, I say the way to overcome it is to, you know, make fight like hell. A, vote on paper with your own hand, then fight like hell to watch it being counted. Go to that county, wherever they're counting them. Go there. I know it's going through an op scan, but go there, watch them, let them know you're watching, and then let's pick up this fight for real election reform. I got to run, Bruce. Thanks for your call. Appreciate it.
Good. Bye.
All right. And where was, I was just going to, by the way, I said before the break, a caller had asked about, what do we do in Ohio and Georgia and all those places? Well, yeah, you know what? Pay attention now. How your voting system works. In Georgia, you're screwed. You got 100% unverifiable voting machines across the entire state. Same deal up there in Delaware. Same deal down there in South Carolina. Same deal over there in Utah. So if that's what you're forced to do, get a paper ballot. Absentee ballot if you have to. A lot of states out here in California where we still have most of the places, thanks to Deborah Bowen, we now have paper ballots, but we count them by computers. But there are still a couple of counties out here, San Mateo, I believe, and Orange County, who still use touchscreen machines. Guess what? You are, voters down in Orange County, you are entitled to vote on a piece of paper at the polls on election day. The very best way to vote. Ask for one. Don't use those crappy machines. If you don't have to, don't do it. If you do have to, well, it's faith-based voting. I don't know. It's up to you. Do you want to vote for, well, who knows? You'll tell me. 877-520-1150. Let's go to, man, we're getting a lot of calls from California. Let me see if I can get out of California for a second. Speaking of electile dysfunction, Gene in Sarasota, Florida. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Gene.
Hi, welcome from the land of foreclosures.
Yeah. Well, you're calling from America, are you?
Yeah, but I'm in the state that had the hanging chads.
Yeah.
That put Bush in office. You have to use absentee ballots.
It wasn't the hanging chads, by the way, Gene, that put Bush in office. It was the fact that Bush and his Supreme Court would not allow us to count those ballots, hanging or otherwise.
No. It was the fact that his brother was governor of the state at the time.
Okay.
And promised that he would get Florida for him, Bush, his brother, one way or another. So Georgia got in because Jeb was governor.
You're also, by the way, in Sarasota, where they lost 18,000 votes in an election, a special election that was Bilberry.
Buchanan. Buddy of George Bush and family, and Dick Cheney and Barbara Bush both came to Sarasota to campaign on his behalf.
629 votes difference, except for those 18,000 votes that disappeared that nobody has ever explained how they disappeared on ES&S touchscreen machines that helped Florida get rid of them, but they're still used all over the country. But anyway, what is your call about, Ms. Dean?
Well, after 20, more than 20, I won't say how many years because that dates me too much, of being a Democrat, I did something after the Obama scam health care bill passed, because that legislation to me was the ultimate. That was my final moment. They called it health care. It's not. It's nothing but mandatory victims for the insurance industry.
Well, what are you going to do?
I changed my party affiliation from Democrat to Independent.
Okay.
And so come this election, and I was just reading a Chicago Tribune article from the other day that the same insurance companies that gave heavily to the Democrats, that gave them such a favorable insurance bill, they aren't 100% happy because they didn't get everything they wanted. So they're now giving three times as much money to the Republicans to get them in so that the Republicans can finish us off and totally destroy health care.
So what's your plan? What are you going to do? Who are you going to vote for?
Well, I am going to vote for Independent or third-party candidate wherever possible, just because I think if enough people did that, that it's kind of like with the Tea Party before it got derailed by the Republicans did, is with sending a message to both the Democrat corporate party and the Republican corporate party that we're the ones voting for you, not the corporations. You're supposed to listen to us, not them.
So you're going to vote for an Independent, even if it means that the Republican ends up winning because of it, correct?
Well, how do you fix the Democrat Party if you keep handing them the votes because saying, well, they're better than the other guys?
You mean the Democratic Party, right, Gene?
I'm sorry, yes.
Okay. Well, no, I hear you. I hear your argument. I think there's a lot of people who are wrestling with that very same question, because if you say, hey, it's okay, we think you did a crappy job, but we're going to vote for you anyway, how do they ever get the message? That's the question.
Well, like you were saying, they have the 60 votes, so what did they do with them? The wars are still going on.
Yep.
They're still funding the wars.
Yep.
They're still spying on us. They didn't revoke the telecommunications bill. In fact, Obama's added to it, and they're spying on us even more.
Okay.
I don't see a change in policy. And what things they did pass, such as the health care bill, was nothing but corporate giveaways and with mandates that we buy that crap. And you watch what's going to happen in 2014. Everybody, 70% of the people didn't want that. They didn't want the mandates. They wanted a public option. They wanted like a Medicare for all.
I hear you. I got to go, Gene.
You watch what's going to happen.
All right. Well, we will watch. Thanks for your call, Gene. By the way, of course, we should have had a public option, of course. But then you had to do the mandates, frankly, if you wanted to take away pre-existing conditions. But we're not going to relitigate that right now. Otherwise, you know, I would wait until I broke my leg before I bought health insurance. But that's a question for another time. Let's go to Mike in La Quinta, California. What's up, Mike?
Hey, Mr. Friedman, how you doing?
Mr. Friedman, please call me Brad. Please call me Brad.
Okay.
How can I help you? What's up?
Well, okay, so you know what? You asked who to vote for, and my thing is to vote for a Democrat. Run out, tell 20 people that you know, make sure they vote for a Democrat. But 20 Republicans that you know and tell them to vote for a Democrat. Democrats had 60 votes, but they had a bunch of chicken, you know, whatever. People pretend to be Democrats, like Lance Lincoln, for example, and Nelson.
Yeah.
And what we need is to push beyond that 60 so that the Democrats have what the Republicans had.
Yeah.
They have a majority in both houses. They have no excuses. And if they can't make it happen, then we form a new party, economic party, constitutional party, whatever you want to call it, party for the working class and the middle class people in this country.
So you're saying give them one more chance. Is that right?
Let's get them over the top. Let's get them over the real top this time.
So you're saying they have to have 60 votes, get them over the top to give them somehow 60 seats. I don't think that's going to happen, by the way. But
well,
you're saying So what if they keep their Senate majority and they still fail? Then you're saying you're going to vote against them in 212, are you, Mike?
No, I'm saying let's form an antithesis of the Tea Party for progressives.
Okay.
Let's give everybody hell.
Okay. I hear you. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate your call. All right. Let me get to Janice. Do I have time? Yeah, Janice in Marcell, Minnesota. Hey, Janice, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show.
Well, thank you. I sort of agree with the last guy, except that he said that we should give them 60 votes or more, and then they have no excuses. Well, they already made excuses at 60 votes. It's ridiculous that we keep excusing them. And I find the Democrats far scarier than anybody because they do more damage, because the Democrats, who normally watch the Republicans and won't let them get away with anything, are letting the Obama administration get away with tons of things. It's ridiculous. Like Gene said, they're still spying on us. They've still got all the Bush people in there for the wars that were running the Bush wars. And they've got this, race to the top on education, which is just Obama leave no child, or the Bush leave no child behind on steroids.
Okay, so you don't like Democrats, you don't trust them. Who do you? Who should I vote for?
Well, if there are any real progressives out there, I think that it's really important to support them. But like my congressman, he was definitely not for the public option, no matter what, but his rhetoric is always good. But if you look at his votes, he doesn't vote.
So who are you going to vote? So who are you going to vote for in that case?
I actually might, for the first time in my life, vote for a Republican.
Okay.
Because I think we need to get rid of these entrenched Democrats, and especially in the House, if we can get rid of them for just 2 years, maybe we can get some real Democrats in there after that.
Okay, fair enough. I appreciate your call, Janice. Let me get to one more, and then I will get to a break, and we will finish up this show. Actually, should I get to... No, okay, let me do one more here. Sonny in Oakland. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show. Sonny, what's on your mind, sir?
Hey, Mike, how are you doing?
No, it's Brad, not Mike. Mike's
Brad,
not...
I'm
yeah,
sorry,
that's all right.
Brad, I apologize.
You got a bad phone, too.
Sorry.
What's up?
I work in the elections every year. I'm a judge and an inspector.
Yeah.
And people do turn out.
Thank you, by the way, for being a poll worker.
Yeah, it's fascinating. The Obama election, I mean, people were coming in there. They couldn't speak English. They were registered U.S. citizens. They were voting like crazy. You shouldn't have been there. It was
what?
A mind blower.
What?
Yeah.
You mean they were registered and they were voting like
registered
crazy.
U.S. American citizens, some of them foreign nationals, and they were voting like crazy.
Wait, foreign nationals were voting like crazy?
Well, I meant they were U.S. citizens.
Okay.
I said the wrong thing.
All right. Just want to make sure. So you're saying there was a great turnout in 2008, a great turnout, very inspiring to see.
Right. What I'd like to see, you know what, the one problem the Democrats have is they're playing this game about being diplomatic, and the Republicans aren't. That's why they're getting the crap kicked out of them.
I hear you. Okay, I got to go. Who should I?
One more thing.
Go.
What happened to Mike Connolly?
Oh, my God, I don't have time to report that story tonight. I'm sorry to say, Sonny, thanks for your call. We're going to get to it. I'll try to touch base on the other side here. You still have time to get in, if you like, 877-520-1150. Who should I vote for, and why? Does it matter? Does it matter if I vote? Well, you'll have about 15 or 20 seconds to say it when we come back, because we're going to try to run through as many folks as we can. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, our final segment coming up, but I'm still over there in the chat room keeping an eye on you people now that I've reloaded Firefox, which crashed. 877-520-1150. Brad in for Malloy. Stay with us.
I could say all the things that I should say. Say them loud, say them clear, for the whole round.
People say I'm crazy, doing what I'm doing. Well, they give me all kinds of warnings to save me from ruin.
Yeah, that's why they're warning me. My thanks tonight to my guests, Dr. David Jefferson, John Wellington Ennis, and of course, the lovely and talented Liz Winstead. My thanks also to Tony Sorrentino, our engineer tonight here at LA's K-Talk AM 1150. Tony, you rock. Your music kills, and everyone agrees with me. Producer Desi Doyen, thank you for producing and screening calls tonight and keeping an eye on the chat room, along with Jeannie Dean at bradblog.com. You guys do a great job on that chat room. Thank you. And, of course, my thanks to Mike and Kathy Malloy, who will be back next Monday with you for the final launch towards November 2nd. If you're listening tonight on MikeMalloy.com, please do stay tuned for Head On with Bob Kincaid following this broadcast. All right, 877-520-1150. Going to fly through the lines, as many folks as I can. So get your comments together. Get them together quick. Who should I vote for? Democrats, Republicans, Independents, or nobody at all? And why? Susan in Squim, Washington. Welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, Susan.
Hi, and I'm for Earth in your chat room. Hi to everybody. I just love your blog, and I'm so happy to hear you on the radio.
Thank you, Susan. I appreciate that. And you're doing a great job in the chat room. Yes. What?
Now, everybody, listen, and listen carefully. You have to vote for Democrats. I know I'm as ticked off as everybody else. I'm to the left of Dennis Kucinich. But if you vote for a Republican, what you're doing is you're voting for Bahrain. You're voting for the major corporations, the banks in Bahrain, the BP, China, all the people that are putting money into the Republican campaigns. There isn't a one that is unsullied.
And you feel that you're not voting for those corporations if you vote for Democrats, Susan?
Well, I think that we have a chance. No, I agree. There are some very corrupt Democrats, and the whole system is corrupt, and maybe it will have to die like Rawl says. But we have to give it one last try, and this is truly our last chance. It is the most important time to not get disgusted. Oh, I may vote for a Republican because I'm so upset because Obama didn't give me single payer. Well, he's passed a lot of stuff. There's been more stuff go through this in the last 2 years than Bush accomplished his whole 8.
Thanks for your call, Susan. I really do appreciate it.
Okay, get out there and vote, Brad.
All right. Oh, maybe. We'll see. Thanks, Susan.
Okay, bye-bye.
Let me get to Paul very quickly and say, do I have time? Santa Fe, New Mexico, welcome to the Mike Malloy Show, sir. How should I vote? Quickly.
Yeah, no, you got to go Democrat. The problem is the Democrats have not been getting the representatives' backs. They've allowed for the last 20 years their reps to be attacked and 24/7 by the Limbaugh Hannity radio stations. There are a thousand of them out there doing coordinated, uncontested repetition. And Liz Winstead talks about reading and viewing, and that's the problem with most of the analysts nowadays. They completely miss talk radio and look elsewhere and miss the whole damn story.
I agree, Paul. You're absolutely right. Talk radio is the voice of the people. These are the people's airwaves, and the fact that we give them over to con men, shills, propagandists like Rush Limbaugh and his crew 24/7, and the Democrats aren't paying attention to that and wonder what the hell is going on. There you go. It's our airwaves. We have allowed them to be given away to liars and corporations and propagandists, and it needs to stop. I'm going to do my best to stop it. I hope you'll join me. Until we see you next time, I'll see you at bradblog.com. Brad Friedman in for Mike Malloy, who will be back next week. Keep it lit, America.